You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour. We've done our taxes, Woo! Herds, and now it's time for our favorite occasion. Every time it comes around, Solari Gentle has put out a new book. It is The Mystery Writer. We are covering chapters 1 to 14 this week on the show. I am in the hot seat, and Herds,
I'm in the sixth seat, but beyond that, I'm in the best seat of all, the seat that has enjoyed this entire novel, and I'm challenging you to solve it, so that'll be fun.
This book follows Theodosia Benton, who is an Australian writer who has fled her law degree in Australia, paid for by her wealthy family.
It's wild.
A wealthy grand family. Her hippies. Parents are
hippies.
Yeah,
they live in
something.
A commune selling beads or something, playing the tambourine. It's a whole thing.
And she's gone to take refuge from fleeing her degree with her brother Gus in Lawrence, Kansas.
Who is one part of three parts of a law firm. I'll be honest, I'm not the best at legalese here, but he co-owns a law firm, and he's apparently like spent all of his money on that, and he lives in squalor, and he's the best damn lawyer you could ever have, but he's a character. I kind of love Gus. He's extremely overprotective of his sister. So when she shows up and she's like, oh, I don't know if you really can help me or you wouldn't have helped me at all. And he's like, nonsense, get in here. And he like gives her hugs all the time. He's emotional. And I just love him. I love the way he acts.
Yeah, he's not quite your archetypical narrative
is
he?
He's competent, but prone to fits of love and passion, which is great.
Theodosia is fleeing her law degree and wants to become a writer, a mystery writer, in fact. And as she's working on her aspiring debut novel in one of the local pubs, she stumbles across another writer by the name of Dan Murdoch.
She meets her one true love, as it were.
He's several years older. They form a budding friendship riding together in these cafe/bars. It's apparently the first time Dan's opened up to anyone in years. And eventually they get down and dirty with it, only for Dan to die.
The day or 2 days after, Theo wants Gus and Dan to get close for backstory reasons, which we'll get into, I'm sure. And they're going to have a lovely family dinner together and everything's going to be great. And Theo's feeling really good about life. And then she literally goes to his house. She sees someone leaving the house. She's like, that's strange. I wonder who that person in that car is. And then he's just dead. She slips on the blood, puts her hands all over the sink and the windows.
In the dark. It very much reminded me of Robert Gott's Good Murder.
I was having the same thought. It's amazing having these like protagonists who are ostensibly our detectives, although she never claims to be a detective, at least at this point in the novel, but she's completely innocent, naive, and a little bit incompetent. She's sort of swept up by events that she's stumbled into.
I wanted to pose you a thought here, Herds.
Uh-oh, dangerous.
Solari Gentle's Crossing the Lines, or A Line Once Crossed, or After She Wrote Him, I would say was an interesting and profound book.
Uh-huh.
I would say that The Woman in the Library was an engaging and enticing book.
Yes.
I would say that The Mystery Writer is a fun and silly book. Would you agree?
I can neither confirm nor deny any silliness, but look, there was a certain point in the novel where I was thinking, I hesitate to call this a true meta-narrative, which we'll get into. Solari likes to end in these novels on a sour note with some last-minute twist or some inevitability that we've been building towards, and I thought that if we end this novel on a, and then everybody dies, I would be very disappointed. So take that for what you will. That was how I felt sort of getting into this novel.
Well, yeah, because the other key thing to know, and the thing that really takes this from being a story about a writer to maybe a metafiction, is that alongside the story, we have this internet forum, The Shield, where these pseudonymous characters are writing about the cabal that runs the world. It's like called the Labyrinth, and it's run by the Minotaur and such and such and such, but it's QAnon. It's clearly meant to be QAnon.
I like the way that this is kind of posed to us because it's the opening of the book. It's Caleb talking about all these spy conspiracies, and it kind of primes you to think that the book is going to be about one thing, although it takes a swift left turn into Theo's everyday nuisances. I do really enjoy that.
It's implied that Caleb is it flag bearer or something like that? Is the
well,
pseudonym?
That's something I actually wanted to ask you about. I would love to know if you can pin down any of these online personas, because there's Flagbearer and Thin Blue and I know Wayward Sun and Primus, obviously. There's all these names online of people who are talking to each other and getting involved in these like conspiracy theories. And Dan, the thing that he kind of introduces us to is the idea that he's in his writing process, he's writing on these QAnon forums to try and see what sorts of conspiracy theories take off, which is really fun. And we see a phenomenon which is kind of fun, where the narratives that seem to be taking root throughout the book are the ones that have support. It reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen, this is a mild tangent, but there's this old viral video of like a guy gets up at a park or something and starts dancing, and then a second guy starts dancing and suddenly everybody's dancing.
Oh yeah.
And
the message, yep, the spontaneous flash mob.
And the message of the video is like, don't you see that it was the second person who really like brought everybody into the dance, not the first person. And that's kind of the vibe I get from these online sections, that it's about, you know, these, if you can get two people to agree to a conspiracy, then they can kind of peer pressure everybody else into believing it, sort of thing.
I will say Primus is clearly meant to be like Dan Murdoch, but whether or not it's him actually writing them or whether it's someone pretending to be him is a completely different question. But it's at least very much meant to be him. And then the other one, I think it's Flag something, but I don't think that's the exact right name. I'm pretty sure that's meant to be Caleb. And I think Caleb is meant to be the brother of Mac, who is one of Gus's sort of employees. He's like a private investigator type character, though he hates the term.
Yeah, he's really fun because he's like a family friend of Gus and now Theo, now they've been introduced. And Theo says, I want you to, you're a private eye detective, like in my mystery books. I need you to figure out what happened to my boyfriend, who I'm a little bit like concerned about my relationship with now.
Well,
exactly, right? Max says, you know, I won't take any money from you, even if the money you're offering me is from this like grandpa trust thing, which is a whole plot point. But he says, you know, I'll help you out. I'm kind of curious anyway to see what's really going on here. And so it's sort of a story of Max's curiosity and his personal attachments kind of drawing him into the story.
It's also sort of implied that Theo has a history of boy trouble.
Yeah.
I don't entirely know the extent of it, but the impression I get is that she left both the commune and her university because of run-ins with men, and now she's sort of like seeing history repeat itself, is the impression that I'm being led to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily want to comment on the plot and the backstory here directly, but yeah, there's definitely some sort of recurring issue here that Theodosia is running into. She's having a problem.
Yeah, which, as you say, Gus is like quite protective, and it seems that that's like where that stems from.
It's definitely a case of these two family members kind of sticking in the same cycle, which is kind of a problem. I guess I'm curious to see what you think, if that's going to like tie into future plot lines, if it's going to repeat again, or I don't know. I guess that's kind of the question.
The fun thing about the narrative here, right, is that obviously we as the audience know that a murder is coming because we're reading a book called The Mystery Writer by Solari Gentil. It's bound to happen, but it very much does come out of nowhere in the text. Like, there is no clear and obvious inciting event that precipitates this murder. And I think to some extent that's the fun thing about the mystery, is trying to figure out what innocuous thing leads to the murder, and we'll talk about that in the back part of the show. But you know, our sequence of events is basically like a literary novel following two writers bonding over writing together, and then abruptly one of them dies and suddenly we're like the lead suspect from the cops.
That's a classic trope where you have to kind of work as the detective in order to clear your own name. So I'm, as always, excited to see how Solari tackles that sort of idea. There's actually been two murders, though, haven't there? There's been Dan Murdoch
Winslow.
And Bert. Bert Winslow, the man who doesn't exist, which is really, really exciting. Some old man who shows up to Theo's house with an opened letter and then stalks her house in the snow.
An opened love letter to her from her recently murdered boyfriend.
Apparently. And then he stalks her house through the night in the snow, maybe? And then he gets shot, apparently.
Extremely bizarre. Yeah, I think it's really engaging the way that Solari is clearly like laying the pieces for the last two thirds of this novel, because like we don't know what Bert's deal is, and there's so many characters he could be in the narrative. Are we going for the device where like it's going to be one all-encompassing villain that explains all these plot threads, or is it going to be a bunch of little pieces? And I think the other fun thing is that we have so many named characters who are named in a way that in an ordinary situation I wouldn't blink at much, but because we're reading this sort of book where anyone could be anyone, you know, is Jock at the Bar secretly an assassin? I need to know.
Yeah, there's lots of cool stuff like that. There's lots of characters. Slattery tends to kind of just throw characters in as she needs them. And so we've got this kind of steadily expanding cast of characters in Lawrence, and any one of them could be the killer.
Although I will note, and true Solari stands will be with me on this one. Larry, Solari's American guide, who detailed Boston in the previous couple of books that she's put out, is in this book. He is writing at one of the bars that Dan and Theo visit together.
It's amazing. You gotta hope that really he's the killer, right? You gotta hope that Larry finally gets to have his moment in the limelight as the killer. And just murders everybody. That's all we want.
It would be a very appropriate sequel for the woman in the library for reasons that we can't get into.
Spoiler reasons.
I don't know, Hertz. I guess the key thing I wanted to ask you is, when you got to this point in the book, how much room did you feel like the story had to go? Because I'm having a great time with this book, but I feel like this is the halfway point of the story.
Are we converging on a similar thought here? I'm worried. Look, it is my duty as the person with all the answers to withhold answers, but I will say at this point in the novel, I had a very clear thought on, there's the thematic that would tie everything together. I'm not sure what we can kind of explore from here, like in terms of like the revelatory ending, I guess. There are definitely some interesting places that we go in terms of background characters, I guess. There are some places that I thought, wouldn't it be fun if we went there? And then we go there and there's some interesting kind of exploration of backstory and cycles, which we'll be able to get into next week.
I think that's one of the most engaging things about the way Solari writes to me, is that either just through coincidence or because of some machination of Solari's vast talent, Solari tends to write basically just a step or two ahead of where I am. So I'll have a realization, turn the page, and Solari's effectively had the same realization in writing it.
I feel like, and you know, I'm not Solari Gentil, as far as I know.
Last I checked.
But I feel like she's just exploring ideas that she thinks are interesting, right? Like she writes, you know, there's these characters that are at the coffee shop and they have X, Y, and Z motivations. Oh, wouldn't it be interesting if we like had that character collide with this other character? How would those characters interact? I'd like to see. And so she writes that as her next sequence.
Yeah, because definitely a couple of the friends that I've recommended Solari's books to kind of do have a problem with the way that it feels in some way a little distracted sometimes, where the book will go in so many different directions because Solari is just going through idea after idea after idea. But I think that to me, the way that Solari does that makes it feel dynamic and engaging.
I feel like I'm on the same journey that she's on, right? Where she's exploring the characters in the same way that I am. One of the good examples is Mary, who we've been introduced to, right? She's this journalist. She shows up at the bar and is like, hey, Theo.
She shows up at Larry's bar is a key distinction.
Yeah, she shows up at Larry's bar. And I feel like that scene is just Solari being like, well, we've warned Theo about journalists, and this is something that Solari is obviously interested in, the way that people interact with the press. So I'll write a scene where someone from the press interacts with Theo, and she wants to highlight the way that these interviewers can be like nice and smiling on the surface and even pretend sympathy, but they're also kind of hounds, you know, for the story.
That end that Mary walks up and she says like, you know, I was a friend of Dan's from off in another city.
I knew him very personally. Which could be true, right?
All that I'm saying is that Solari Gentil is the deep state. You're listening to Death of the Reader, your murder mystery world tour,
Solari
here on 2SER
107.3.
Primus. We are talking Solari Gentil's The Mystery Writer, chapters 1 to 14. We'll be back with more of that in just a second. Stick around. You're listening to Death of the Reader on 2SER 107.3. Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour. We are discussing Solari Gentil's The Mystery Rider, chapters 1 to 14. Whoa. It is time for me to solve this book, Herds.
Yeah, you gotta solve the mystery. What's happening? I know. Are you posing a real theory, or are you gonna wait for next week for that? How you feeling?
So, I wanted to let you know. I'm going to attempt to pose an actual, genuine, real theory today.
Rare on this show. Rare thing is happening. Yeah, okay.
But I'm scared. Because as I said in the first part of the show, I am not sure how we're going to get another two-thirds out of this book. So I might have the pacing that this guess is sort of based off a little... A little off, you know?
Okay. Can I just throw you a couple of things I'd like you to talk about? Because obviously I want you to, like, tell me the who, how, and why of Dan Murdoch's murder. He's the prime murder, the primus murder, if you will. But also, Bert Winslow, I want to know who killed him and why. Is it the same person? What the heck is his deal? And again, if you have any additional insights into the QAnon forums, if there are any characters who might have appeared online under a different alias, sort of thing. I think that would be really cool if you could tackle that.
Well, I'm going to start by asking Herds, what is the name of the publisher? That we have?
Veronica Cole.
Veronica Cole, who works for...
Oh God, Daedalos and Associates, I believe.
Say that one more time.
Daedalos.
Just a Daedalos. Little faster.
Daedalos. Icarus.
Yeah.
What? Icarus and Associates?
Yeah, Daedalus, you know, the guy who made The Labyrinth.
What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. I don't know how that could possibly have any connection to anything we've read in this book.
As I mentioned earlier, the conspiracy theory is talking all about this labyrinth that's been made, and it sure is suspicious that Daedalos and Associates, if you say it fast enough, sounds a little classical mythology. And as we all know, Solari Gentil, did you not realize that?
No, I didn't actually. That's ridiculous. Can I just say, look, I've been reading this book in a fever late at night.
A literal fever.
I mean, yeah, I am unwell. It may have tarnished my poor brain. But can I just say that if you're going to run a national conspiracy, don't put Greek words anywhere near your public facing conspiracy. It's just not smart.
It's just silly.
It's just not wise. Like, I just don't know how anyone didn't figure anything out before this book happened. Anyway,
yep.
Let's move on.
So anyway, I'm just going to say that I think Daedalus, the craftsman, is running the conspiracy theory about the labyrinth.
Maybe it's a huge red herring. Maybe it's just a huge red herring.
You tell me.
I can't tell you. I'm not the one solving the book.
Here's the thing. I do think that Primus is Dan Murdoch. And I reckon that Primus, Dan Murdoch, is writing the conspiracy theory, not for his own interest and engagement, but because his publisher has told him to and because he's good at it.
Oh my God.
So when he goes missing, much in the same way that Q has a break in continuity when 8chan relaunched as 8kun in 2021, that
yes,
they are basically turning a logical break in continuity in this conspiracy theory into a self-feeding part of the conspiracy theory, because that's kind of one of the key mechanisms, as you were talking about earlier, that conspiracy theories have to end up in this state where they almost perpetuate themselves.
Yeah, snowball.
Yeah.
Or else they don't go anywhere. They stagnate.
So what I think happened here is that Dan Murdoch is Jack Chase, the author of the book that Dan and Theo bond over at the start of the story. And I think what's happened is that Dan Murdoch is a pseudonym, a Frankenstein, a resurrection of Jack Chase, who disappeared after a scandal earlier in his career. Whether that scandal is real or something that is manufactured by his publishers is something I think is up for debate, but I'm going to say it was manufactured by his publishers to basically get control of him so that they could do weird conspiracy writing and let him have his career separately, like to basically take him out of the public eye. Because when Veronica is offering Theo a contract with Daedalos, they're talking all about how they basically will take full control of her public image and never to share anything and don't even mention that you're talking with us.
It's a full secrecy thing. And there's even a bit where quite foreshadowingly she says, are you sure you haven't told anyone except for Dan Murdoch, who is dead, by the way, about what we're doing here? And she thinks, oh, surely Gus doesn't count. So obviously her telling Gus is like the important thing there.
Now, the key thing is Herd's. Why was Dan Murdoch killed if he was writing their conspiracy
it's true,
for them?
It's true. You took the words right out of my mouth.
And Herd's.
Why the murder?
Well, I was going to ask you, why did Theo have this book of Jack Chase's?
Because she thought it was a real good book.
Yeah, but where did she get it?
Why are you asking me? You know the answer. You know the answer to these questions.
Because I'm trying to make this show dynamic and engaging like Solari's writing Herd's.
It's not. That's a failure. It's a failure of this show.
Answer the question, Herd's.
She has the book because it's kind of a symbol of her bond with her brother, mm-hmm. because her brother met Jack Chase
yes.
in his backstory mm-hmm. and even got it autographed
yes.
By him. So there's a through line there. It's a family connection.
And what was Theo going to do, Herd's, right before she slipped in Dan Murdoch's blood?
She was going to invite him to dinner.
Dinner with whom?
With Mac, I think.
With Mac, really, Herd's. With Mac?
Could you imagine? That's what I think happened. I'd have to check the tapes. No, she wants to have a dinner with Gus and Dan so that she can show Gus that Dan isn't the sleazeball that everyone thinks that he is.
And effectively, we find out, well, Dan finds out at the start of the story that Theo has this book because her brother got it signed. So my expectation here is that Dan Murdoch was killed because he was about to be found out by Gus.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think that Daedalus and Icarus also killed Bert Winslow? Or do you think that that's a separate party or a coincidence?
I think Daedalus killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know who in this story, other than Veronica Cole, represents Daedalus. Because she is, and by the way, Solari, just a real great pick writing that name in a way that you'll only reveal the clue to yourself if you say it out loud. Just a real smooth, buttery one on that.
I'm glad you enjoyed Herd's, Greek mythology so
Herd's
much.
Herd's didn't even realize it.
I know. I'm embarrassed. I'm supposed to be the Greek mythology guy.
Exactly.
Although I prefer Norse.
So I don't think Veronica Cole is the one with literal blood on her hands. It sort of seems like we have the guy with the spiderweb tattoo.
Suspicious man.
Yeah.
But he like rear ends.
Yeah, he like rams Theo's car. And
grabbing at her and stuff.
Yeah, he follows her around from the crime scene. Like, I assume that is Daedalus's man on the ground. That's my guess. I have no idea who he is, but that's what I think he is.
That's fair. I have another question then before we get too deep in the weeds here. So you reckon that this conspiracy publisher company, which is ridiculous, have killed Dan to prevent him from meeting Gus? Why not just kill Gus? What, isn't Gus like not the person who's currently writing them a multi-billion dollar franchise plus the QAnon stuff? Like, that seems like a shame to lose someone so talented.
Because Gus exists.
Gus exists. It's not a good...
You'll notice that everyone answer. Else who's died in this story has no identity outside of who they are to this case. Dan Murdoch is only the writer Dan Murdoch signed to Daedalus and Associates. Bert Winslow is not at the address he says he is, and nobody can identify him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my guess is that he was probably Dan's gardener, who is absent without leave in the story. And I think that's probably how he got the letter. I think he worked on Dan's property and had the letter. And basically, once the company found out that he had it, they decided to get rid of him. Because this is that idea of coercive control, right? Where if you are nothing outside of what you are to this company, then you are disposable and replaceable. And that's what they're doing to these authors. They make it sound beneficial to Theo when she's pitching joining them, but I think that it is a coercive control relationship, and that is sort of paralleling what it is implied Theo has gone through in previous relationships.
So I guess the question is then, where does this leave Theo? What's her arc going to be, do you think?
This is where I'm stuck on that idea of this feeling like halfway through the book. At some point, we have to come to that crux of a decision where does she sign with them and end up inside the machine? And then does the story continue to her trying to break out of the machine? That doesn't seem like a Super Solari Gentle ending to me. Or does the story go with her avoiding coming into the machine and we find out what the machine is before she takes that plunge? Or do we find out what it is right as she's taking the plunge and that's when we get our Solari Gentle weirdly somber ending? There's a bunch of different ways this could swing, but I think Theo has to have a stable boy by the end of the book. It's probably going to be Mac, because he's the crazy one, right? He's the crazy one from the crazy family.
He's the loose cannon.
He's the loose cannon, so...
Well, he's practical, though.
Exactly. So that's got to be Theo's, like, romantic arc through the story. By the way, Solari, listen, I know I complimented you several books ago on not putting sex scenes, and then you've now put one in every book since. I get it, okay? You're trying to show me up. I got the message.
Just to taunt you. It's to taunt
it's
you.
It's just for me. I know it is. Yeah.
She's writing these sex scenes just for you.
Just for me. Because I hate them. She's trying to throw me off herds.
Yeah, it's trying to distract you.
Exactly. But the thing I'm stuck on is absolutely that question, is which arc are we going on? Because I don't feel like there's a clear direction here. And I feel like, as with everything I've just said in this part of the show, I feel like I have a lot of my answers for what's happening here. So, like, what's next? Clearly, at some point, we need to meet Mac's crazy family.
All I want is to have to defend the family compound against hordes of, I don't know, spies.
Hordes of pseudonymous writers.
Publisher spies. Yes, that's all I wanted in the world.
The story is sort of gearing up for the implication that maybe Mac's family, like, did the crimes because they're so obsessed, and like, particularly, I assume his brother, Caleb, is so obsessed with the conspiracy that he, like, acted on it, because they're talking in that first part of chapter one about how his family will come to respect him once they've seen everything that's going on under the hood of the world.
Yeah, it definitely feels like one of those, like, red herring beginnings, but you don't know how far Caleb's madness goes, right?
Yeah, I assume that's going to be a tale to, like, explore through an indirect lens Theodosia's relationship with her differently zany family and kind of help her get some closure on that.
We haven't really seen much of them, but the two families are kind of on opposite sides of the political spectrum. The grassroots hippies, and then we've got the, like, doomsday conspiracy preppers on the other end. It's crazy that children of those two families would come together over a murder mystery.
Crazy.
It's wild. Wild.
It really is that finishing piece that I don't know in which direction Solari is going to take this book. I'm going to say, for the sake of making my prediction for this show, that we are going to find out what Daedalus and associates are up to as Theodosia, like, takes the contract at kind of a breaking point. So I think she is going to end up in their claws. And, like, it feels to me like we're getting pretty close to that happening and that there can't be that long after that. But there's a lot of book left, so I have to be missing something big. Like, you know, we obviously still need to deal with the police suspecting her, but also that's clearly part of how they're going to, like, get her in the door of Daedalus Associates. I don't know, Hurst. Do you have any other questions you'd like me to answer here? Because I'm definitely, like, spinning my wheels here.
I'm enjoying watching you spin your wheels. I feel like that's kind of fun. I guess I'm curious, because I also had the question of, like, is this going to end on a somber note, or are we somehow going to kind of avoid that sort of tragic ending? I guess I'm curious if you think, is there a happy ending here, or are we driving towards inevitable madness and despair, like so many of Solari's other outlets?
I think the reason this book feels like it doesn't have much further to go is because it's going to come back from the usual brink Solari would leave us at. I think if this book ends where my brain thinks it's going to end, that's going to be our part two here on the show. So I think just because this book is longer than I think it, quote unquote, should
quote unquote,
be.
Yes. Being very delicate here, Flex, with your wording.
Because this book is longer than I think it would be if we were ending in Solari's usual place, then I think we're going to come back from the brink. I think we have to have a daring rescue.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how you find it. I'm really excited to talk about the second sort of section of this book. Whether or not there are wheels that are spinning, they're being driven by some absolute mad characters. which I'm really excited about. We'll just have to hope that Theo doesn't end up in another place of safety, because we all know what that means in a Slurry Gentle novel. Anyway, yep. Next week on the show, we'll be covering from chapters 15 to 25.
Exciting.
Pretty much exactly 2/3 of the way through the book. I wanted to cut it earlier, but there's too much stuff that happens.
There's just stuff that happens.
Chapter 25 is pretty important, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you make of it all.
Excellent. Well, this is your Murder Mystery World Tour, Death of the Reader, here on 2SER 107.3. We'll be back next week with more of Solari Gentle's The Mystery Writer. Catch you then. We're out of here.
See you around.